Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on rare earths and forbidden cures when we come back. You know, the average American household making between $22,000 and $30,000 a year spends about 16%, about $5,000 of its income on food. Now, if the household makes between $40,000 and $60,000 a year, then they'll spend about 10%, or about $6,000 on food. 12% of American households purchase organic produce, and they buy from health food stores and organic produce salesmen and farmers markets. Now, that translates into some 34 million people coast to coast and border to border, and already there are more than 4,000 small organic farms producing organic fruits and vegetables and meats on 25 acres or less, and they make $100,000 a year serving this growing specialty market. Some of these farms are as small as 3 acres, and they're in every state in the union. Old Henry Kaiser summed it up quite nicely when he said of his business success, "Find a need and fill it." Well, here's a need that's just waiting to be filled. And the law school has a program to teach you how to make that $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. It's a 5-day school, and it includes lessons on marketing, business plans, growing organic foods, and the law. Why don't you call today and order our free 4-hour CD package? It's entertaining, informative, it's educational, and remember, it's free of charge. The number to call, 417-273-4967, to order yours. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Rare Earths and Forbidden Cures, a book written by Joel Wallach. Joel Wallach is the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. Dead Doctors Don't Lie. A very humorous tape that I heard some years back in which he made a remarkable statement. He said, "The average longevity of medical doctors in the United States is 57 years old." Now think about that. The average lifespan in the United States of Joe Sixpack driving truck and Sally housewife taking her kids to the soccer practice is 75.5 years, 75 and a half years. Medical doctors, the boys that give us all of these drugs and cures and all of this medical research, die on average at age 57. Hey, there's got to be something wrong. When I heard that statement, I said, well, my God, medical doctors should live to be 85 or 90 if the rest of us live to be 75, because these guys are the professionals. These are the guys that tell us how to live longer, healthier, happier, more wholesome lives. Isn't that why we go to the doctor? When we get sick, you don't go down to Flo's Whorehouse or down to O'Leary's Bar. You go to the doctor. You go to the clinic. You go to the hospital, don't you? And that's because we believe, or at least I thought we believed, that when you get sick, you go to the doctor because the doctor's got the cure. Well, if the doctor's got the cure, then how come the doctors die 18 years earlier than the rest of us? That doesn't make any sense, does it? Well, Dr. Wallach didn't think it made any sense either. And so he did a little research and found out that doctors rely upon drugs rather than foods for their healing art. And Dr. Wallach, being a veterinarian, made an observation. He said, you know, we can't treat cows like we treat people because it's not economical. He likened it to a story in which he said, let's suppose that a cow had diabetes. Well, could we afford then to give this cow a shot of insulin 2 or 3 times a day in order to keep her alive and producing in the milk herd? No, he said, that wouldn't be economical. If a cow had plugged up arteries, could we give the cow coronary bypass surgery? No, he said that wouldn't be economical. So the way veterinarians deal with disease in cattle is to determine what nutritional deficiency is this cow suffering from. And so as an example, he said, well, when a cow has got this kind of a disease, we determine that it's suffering from some mineral deficiency, and so we give them a mineral block. And sure enough, the cow goes out and licks on the mineral block, and she gets the minerals that she needs, and then the disease goes away. You know, it's kind of like scurvy. You know, if somebody comes up with scurvy, then we give them vitamin C and the scurvy goes away, because scurvy is a deficiency disease. And when we look into disease, we find that disease comes in two forms. One, it's a deficiency of something that you need, like vitamin C causes scurvy. Or two, it's a toxic disease, which means that you're suffering from some kind of a poison which is causing this malady. For instance, we see on the news, they give us the report on the pollen count. Every night the weatherman says, oh, the pollen count is thus and such, and here's how much pollen is in the air, so many parts per million or billion or something. And what's happening here is that you're ingesting so many bits and pieces and parts of these pollens, and these pollens then are irritants, and they cause your eyes to water and your nose to run, and you feel real bad. And so you go to the doctor to get some kind of a remedy to prevent or to stop or to alleviate these symptoms. But is the doctor really the guy that you need to go to? Because if the doctor's dying at age 57, doesn't that tell you that, well, maybe he doesn't know as much as we thought he did? So disease then is either a deficiency or a toxin, or it's a combination of the two. You know, you could take too much arsenic and the net result would be death. Or you could take this arsenic and then you could follow the arsenic with an antidote, which might be activated charcoal, which would then neutralize the poison, which then would equal life. So we look upon the medical doctor as the guy that's got the right chemical balance, and that we got a chemical imbalance and the doctor is going to give us the right chemical balance. And so when you go to the doctor and he promotes some kind of a drug to you, you know, maybe it's Vioxx. Does that mean that you're suffering from a Vioxx deficiency? And so he gives you Vioxx. I mean, if you had scurvy, he would say, well, you've got a vitamin C deficiency, so we need to eat more oranges or more green peppers or something that's got vitamin C, or maybe we'll just give you a supplement here. Let's just give you a vitamin C pill. And that would solve that problem. So when the doctor is recommending to you that you take a Nasonade or Vioxx or some other drug, is he saying to you that you're suffering from a Vioxx deficiency? Well, it would appear to me that that's exactly what he's telling you. Now, where does this Vioxx come from? Isn't it an inorganic chemical compound discovered by some pharmaceutical company over here, promoted and sold over the counter to alter the chemical balance in your body? But let me ask you this. Is there something wrong with the chemical balances in our bodies, particularly here in the United States, where we have so much in the way of disease? Now, if the average guy dies at age 75 and a half, doctors die at age 57, what about the rest of us? Well, I took a look at some obituaries here in the book. This is a great big thick book. Let me see how many pages are in here. We're at about 500 pages. 500 pages. It's called Rare Earths and Forbidden Cures. The author is Joel D. Wallach and Ma Lan. And between the two of them, they've got a BS, a DVN, and an ND, an MD, and an MS. I don't know what the MS is. But Ma Lan is his wife, and they wrote this book, and it's a big thick manual, and it deals with these trace elements, of which he says there are 90 of these trace elements that you have to have if you want to live to be old and full of years. And this book is printed and published by the Double Happiness Publishing Company, P.O. Box 1222, Bonita, California, 91908. I'll give you that again. It's printed and published by the Double Happiness Publishing Company. Imagine if you wrote them a letter, I imagine they'd probably tell you what the price is. I haven't got a clue as to how much it is. P.O. Box 1222, Bonita, California, 91908. But I can give you a little more information. They've got a telephone number here somewhere. And I suppose if you called 1-800-755-4656, you might get an answer. Again, that's 1-800-755-4656. And while you're at it, make sure you ask for the audio tape called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. He's got a price on that one. It's $30. I think that's it. Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Forget calorie counting, cholesterol, exercise, and too much salt. Dr. Wallach shatters the health myths. His humor combined with irresistible simple logic provides hope and inspiration for those whose health problems are out of control. The concepts taught by Dr. Wallach empower you like never before to take control of your own health. The classic 2-hour and 16-minute lecture, $29.95. Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Now, he's standing, here's a picture of him in here, he's standing next to a gravestone here. It says, died, the average age of medical doctors in 1895, 54.6 years. In 1993, 57.6 years. Journal of the American Medical Association. Came from JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association. Well, in 1895, they died about age 55, and in 1993, 100 years later, they're dying at age 57 or 58. Now, Wallach was a veterinarian, and I kind of like this solution to the problem that he described with cattle. He said, you know, if you've got a cow over here that's got a mineral deficiency, we put a salt lick out here that has mineral, by mineral blocks. I can relate to that because that's what I do. I go over to the feed store and I buy, you know, 5 or 6 mineral blocks, and I stick them out in the various fields, you know, so that all the cattle all the sheep, you know, have access to this mineral block. And if they're not getting enough minerals out of the food that they're eating, they go over and they lick on that block and they'll get the minerals that they need. Trace elements, 90 of them. Well, Dr. Wallach said the solution for humans is just as simple. What you do is you go down to the feed store and you get a salt lick and you put it on the dining room table. And every time you walk by the dining room table, you just lean over and you lick on it a couple, three licks, and then go about your daily routine. Every time you come back through the dining room, you stop and lick on it two or three licks, and that'll take care of your mineral problems and probably take care of your diabetes and rheumatism and arthritis and everything else, because you'll notice that cattle have better health than people. Cattle have better health than people. Well, at least they do here in the United States. Well, I thought I'd take a look at a couple of three obituaries here. So over here on page 323, there's a couple of three obituaries, and I thought I'd share that with you, because the first one here, Stuart Cartwright, age 38, family practice physician. Young fellow, 38 years old. Stuart Cartwright, 38, a family practice physician, formerly with Kaiser Permanente in La Mesa, died suddenly Wednesday at his home. Dr. Cartwright practiced at the La Mesa Kaiser Permanente outpatient clinic for the past 2.5 years and was in the process of joining a local medical group. He died of cardiac aneurysm, his family said. Doctor died, cardiac arrest. Ellen Joyce Alter, a Detroit civic leader and bankruptcy lawyer, died on Saturday at St. Joseph Mercy Hospital in Pontiac, Michigan. She was 44. Her family said the cause was a cerebral aneurysm. Country music star Conway Twitty dies. Conway Twitty, who started as a teen rock idol in the 1950s and crossed over to country to become a star, died Saturday at age 59. Conway Twitty, age 59. David Houston, star at the Grand Ole Opry. David Houston, the Grand Ole Opry star who won a Grammy for the country music classic Almost Persuaded, died Tuesday at the age of 57. 57, Conway Twitty. Representative Paul B. Henry, 51, dies after battling brain cancer. Representative Paul B. Henry, whose hard work and moderate views made him a rising star in the National Republican Party, died Saturday at his home. He was 51. And then Richard Jordan, age 56, an award-winning actor and director whose career spanned movies, television, and stage, died of a brain tumor on Monday in Los Angeles. Dr. Helen F. Sear, age 57, brain researcher. Helen F. Sear, a professor of psychology, or physiology rather, at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, whose research focused on the anatomy and mechanism of the human brain, died August 11th at her home in North Dighton, Massachusetts. She was 57. Now, that's five or six or seven obituaries of the rich and famous. I mean, these people are doctors, surgeons, they're brain specialists, they're country western movie stars, they're in business, you know, CEOs. These are people with money who can afford the best medical care that money can buy. You know, not Joe Sixpacks like us. I mean, these guys have plenty of bread, and they're dying in their 50s, 40s, 30s. Why is that? Is there something that we need to know that we aren't being told? Is there something that if you and I had more information, maybe we could avoid dying at age 58? Well, let's take a look at this thing called pica and cribbing. You ever heard the word pica, P-I-C-A? Well, here in Wallach's book on page 53, he gives us a little clue as to what he's talking about. He says, obesity and overweight problems are synonymous with Americans. Nibble, nibble, nibble all the way home. Pica, P-I-C-A, is a seeking. It's a craving with licking and chewing behavior that has its genesis in mineral deficiencies. Interestingly enough, neither vitamin deficiency, protein deficiency, or calorie deficiency initiates this pica behavior, nor will supplementing vitamins or eating sugar, carbohydrate, fat, or protein quench it either. Since American soils are critically deficient and depleted in minerals, it is no surprise that pica, cribbing, and craving dominate the American scene. America is minerally deficient. Dieters, athletes, vegetarians, meat eaters, embryos, children, teenagers, young adults, and seniors. The snack food and snack food industries are aware of this relationship between pica, cribbing, cravings, sugar binges, and salt hunger, and they use it to their advantage by liberally salting or sweetening their products. Unfortunately for us, our bodies temporarily translate sugar and salt consumption as a fulfillment of the craving for nutritional minerals. For example, if we're lacking in iron, salt or sugar will temporarily satisfy our pica behavior initiated by this iron deficiency. Historically, the consumption of salt to satisfy a pica behavior was of value because salt was not processed and it did oftentimes contain trace minerals and rare earths. However, today, salt consumption, although contrary to popular belief, is not in and of itself harmful. It does present the problem of allowing our bodies to think that we're getting minerals, the equivalent of the empty calorie diet. For example, processed food calories without any vitamins or minerals. Farmers and husbandrymen use the salt hunger of animals to ensure the consumption of trace minerals by incorporating trace minerals in salt blocks containing 85% salt. Anything less than 85% sodium chloride in a salt block will be ignored by the animals, even if they have major mineral deficiencies. Cribbing is a name given to a particular form of pica. We find it in domestic animals. A good husbandryman knows when a horse or a cow cribs, that is, chews or gnaws on a wooden feed box, fence, hitching post, or barn door. The animal really has a craving for minerals. Such mineral-starved animals will at first eat large amounts of supplemental minerals until they're satisfied. Then they will automatically reduce their level of consumption to a maintenance level. Salt appetite is very striking in both pregnant animals and humans. Bizarre cravings are legendary in pregnant humans. From antiquity, the description of cravings or pica in humans relates its major incidence to pregnant women. The Hawaiian king, Kamehameha, his mother, Queen Kikapiawa, had cravings for eyeballs. Although she specifically wanted chief's eyes, she was given the eyes of sharks to eat. We have seen 100 pregnant sheep in Montana lined up along an embankment eating clay. This is a form of pica known as geophagia, or earth eating. Geophagia is very common in minerally deficient pregnant humans. Pica, or perverted appetite or irresistible cravings with the eating of bizarre or unsuitable non-food substances or fattening non-foods, has been a curiosity for philosophers, doctors, and priests for thousands of years. Pica, as a symptom of mineral deficiencies, is universal in the world and has been reported in animals and humans of all age groups. In modern times, the easy availability of candy, sugared, high-calorie snacks, soft drinks, and other junk foods has led to obesity when people feel the deep cravings of pica. A doctoral thesis on pica by Augustus Mergillatus in 1701 begins with the definition of pica. He says it's the malady. Pica is called chitta in Greek. Its derivation comes from the name of the common magpie, because the bird pica is the Latin name for magpie. Itself is believed to suffer from some malady, because it flits from tree to tree, constantly seeking food, or because it enjoys all sorts of foods. Well, a catalog of bizarre instances of pica is found by Mergillatus' thesis. In men, he recorded one individual who ate leather, wood, nestlings, and live mice. Sounds like an initiation into some college fraternity, doesn't it? A second consumed woolen garments, leather, a live cat, and some mice. And a third ate cat's tails and decomposed human bodies with maggots. In Mergillatus' female subjects, he recorded women who ate human flesh, including one particularly horrible lady who lured children with sweets, killed them, and then picked them for her daily fare. Sounds like a female version of Jeffrey Dahmer. The murders were only discovered when the woman's cat stole the pricked hand of a child and then carried it over to the neighbor's house. The most common description of pica by Mergillatus were of women's desire for mud and mortar scraped from walls, just like modern children who eat caulk and lead paint. We have often said that children who eat lead paint are screaming for minerals for their mineral-starved bodies. Give them minerals and they won't eat lead paint. Girls who ate their own hair, girls who ate cotton, thread from their own clothes, raw grain, and lizards. Mergillatus also described pica in animals, including cats who ate wood ash and pregnant hunting dogs that ate unusual objects. Cooper, in 1957, in her classic report on pica, refers to several ancient and medieval writers who emphasized the occurrence of pica in pregnant women. For example, Aetos noted pregnant women to crave various and odd foods, some salty and some acid. Some, he said, crave for sand, oyster shells, and wood ashes. Aetos recommended a diet including fruits, vegetables, green vegetables, pig's feet, fresh fish, and old tawny fragrant wine. Bozo, in 1638, noted that pica occurred most often in pregnant women. Bozo saw pica as a physiological problem and is the first to mention iron preparations as a treatment for pica. He suggested 1 1/2 scruples of iron dross taken for many days as wonderfully beneficial for men and women. Bozo also noted the case of a virgin who was accustomed to devour salt in great quantities, from which chronic behavior she developed diarrhea and wasting. Today we call that Addison's disease. Christiani in Frankfurt in 1691 reported a woman who ate 1,400 salt herrings during her pregnancy. Leconte in 1846 suggested that animals eating earth do so because of a want of inorganic elements. In modern times, the substances frequently reported as eaten as a result of pica behavior in humans includes paper, metallic gum wrappers, ice, dirt, coal, clay, chalk, starch, baking powder, pebbles, wood, plaster, paint, chimney soot, hair, human and animal feces, kitty box litter, and cloth. Because of social constraints on our public behavior, most people under public scrutiny who display pica eat sugar, snack food, or soft drinks when they crave minerals. Many smoke, drink alcohol, or use street or prescription drugs in an attempt to satisfy a nagging underlying craving for minerals. Ice eating is also common, especially for iron-deficient children and adults. Worms have been reported as a cause of pica, and they have been blamed. Parasites, of course, can cause anemia and malnutrition by direct blood sucking from the host or by competing for food in the gut. The resulting anemia is, in fact, perceived by the body as an iron deficiency resulting in pica. Pica is more frequently seen in the poor and the obese. However, David Livingston observed that both slaves and the gentry developed pica in Africa. In Africa, pica is viewed by tribal peoples as a magical, superstitious behavior. Henrock, in 1831, attributed pica to paucity of good blood and a lack of proper nutrition. Waller, in 1874, reported that David Livingston observed many cases of clay and earth eating, a frequent form of pica in pregnant women. Orrin Gilka, in 1931, and De Castro, in 1952, recognized that edible earths might be rich in sodium, iron, and calcium. Gelfert, 1945, reported that pica was common in Kenya amongst African tribes, living mainly on a vegetarian diet, but absent in those people eating diets rich in animal flesh, blood, and bones. Richter, in 1955, reported Kirkham and Birch analysis of 20 samples of edible clay from Africa. Dickens and Ford reported that 25% of all children ate earth. Cooper, in 1957, reported a 21% rate of pica in American children, referred to the Mother's Advisory Service in Baltimore. Landowski in 1959 reported that 12 children with pica had hemoglobin that ranged from 3 to 11 g% with a mean of 7.89%. The institution of iron resulted in a cure for pica in 1 to 2 weeks. And again, if children have sufficient nutritional minerals, they will not eat lead paint. McDonald and Marshall in 1964 reported on 25 children who ate sand. They divided the group in half. They gave one group iron and the other group salt solution. After 3 to 4 months, 11 of the 13 children given iron had lost their pica behavior, compared with only 3 of the 12 that were given salt. Reynolds, 1968, reported that 38 people with anemia exhibited ice eating as the most common form of pica. 22 of 25 had their symptoms of pica disappear after correcting with an iron supplement. Woods and Weisinger, 1970, reproduced experimentally in rats by withdrawing blood. The pagophia in the anemic rats was cured when the anemia was cured. It is of interest to note that pica or cribbing behaviors are not produced by vitamin deficiencies. They are produced by mineral deficiencies. Two-thirds of the 153 pregnant women studied by Taggart in 1961 developed cravings. The most common craving was for fruit, pickles, blood pudding, licorice, potato chips, cheese, and kippers. A craving for sweets, vegetables, nuts, and sweet pickles came in second place. Phosphate appetite was described by Levant in 1796 as the anxious search by cattle in phosphate-deficient South African pastures for discarded dog bones. They also chewed on wood and each other's horns. Bone chewing has been reported in many wild species of herbivores, including reindeer, caribou, red deer, camels, giraffe, elephant, and wildebeest. And we've seen elephant eating limestone roadbeds and large termite heaps as ready and available mineral supplements. A search for calcium-rich edible clays and soils and territorial disputes over limited supplies led to wars in tribal Africa. And it's been demonstrated that calcium-deficient weanling rats will consume large amounts of a lead acetate solution, even though they taste bad, when compared with calcium-fed controls. The Oriental diet is extremely low in calcium, leading them to habitually and preferentially eat bones. When Dr. Maulan and I were courting, she ate the bones and gave me the fillets, partially leached of calcium with vinegar. There is no evidence of a specific pica behavior for a magnesium supplement when laboratory animals are fed a magnesium-deficient diet. Magnesium-deficient animals will crave and eat common salt. Magnesium tastes bad enough that animals will die of magnesium deficiency-initiated seizures rather than consume a pure magnesium supplement. It has been suggested that recovery from a magnesium deficiency can be a very unpleasant process, enough so that the bad taste of magnesium supplements normally required for recovery exceeds the unpleasant features of the deficiency. A natural potassium deficiency is highly unlikely, as all grains, fruits, and vegetables tend to be rich in potassium. A potassium deficiency can be common in those individuals taking diuretics for high blood pressure or weight loss. Potassium deficient rats are hyper alert and lick everything, including their metal cage, lab equipment, from each other and urine puddles. It is of interest to note that even with a severe potassium deficiency, laboratory rats have a strong craving for sodium chloride, common table salt. Chromium and vanadium deficiencies are manifested by thirst for liquid, soft drinks being the usual first choice and water the last, and hunger for carbohydrates, such as soft drinks, coffee and tea with added sugar, alcohol, pasta, desserts, and bread. The munchies cravings for alcohol and candy cravings, especially chocolate, are sure signs of a chromium and vanadium deficiency. The preteen and teenage infatuation with snack foods, drugs, smoking, and alcohol appear to be the result of pica because they are so minerally deficient. They are seeking something, anything, to put in their mouth that will satisfy this irresistible craving for minerals. God help us, through massive Hollywood film, television, newspaper, and magazine advertising, our culture guides our children to snack food, drugs, alcohol, and smoking, rather than mineral supplements, just as surely as the Pied Piper hypnotized the rats to follow him with his pipe music. All right, there's the story on pica. So if you have a craving, you know, you're eating a lot of chocolate. You know what your problem is, don't you? You got a vanadium deficiency. And the chocolate doesn't have any vanadium in it, any more than the common table salt has any minerals in it. Although there is a form of salt. We buy a pretty expensive salt that comes out of the North Sea. And it's naturally evaporated. And it has the minerals in the salt. Cost $22 a pound, a little more than the 55 cent a pound Leslie or Morton salt that you buy in the grocery store, which is a chemical composition. What they do there is they take it out of the ocean down in the South Bay, in San Francisco Bay, and then they take all the minerals out of it and give you the sodium chloride, and then they sell the minerals in mineral blocks to feed the livestock. So when Dr. Wallach said, if you've got pica and you've got a mineral deficiency, you go down to the local feed store and you buy a mineral block and you put it on the dining room table. And every time a member of the family walks past the dining room table, they just lean over, give it two or three licks, and that'll solve their pica problem. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide every day, 7 days a week over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4900. 67. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. But for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And we're reviewing the book Rare Earths and Forbidden Cures by Dr. Joel Wallach. And you can probably get a copy of this book by writing to the publisher or calling this number. 1-800-755-4656. Again, that's 1-800-755-4656. Or you can write to P.O. Box 1222, Bonita, California, B-O-N-I-T-A, California, 91908. Again, that's P.O. Box 1222, Bonita, B-O-N-I-T-A, California, 91902. Wallach is kind of peculiar in that he believes that the ultimate test of a product is that the people who sell it use it themselves. So like the financial advisor who invests his own money in the same funds that he recommends to his patients. So I just thought that I would share with you this book called Rare Earths. Very unusual book, 500 pages. It's actually a text or a manual on the 90. I believe there's 92, I believe he says in here, 92. I'm going to write that down. 92 inorganic mineral elements that you need for good health. And of course, we know what we need, vitamin C, and without it, we get scurvy. And Wallach concludes that the reason you get Alzheimer's disease is because you have a selenium deficiency. In fact, in the book, he points out what happens with a selenium deficiency and what happens when you replace this deficiency with selenium. The symptoms go away. Now, it's a tragedy, it's a paradox that 3 million people in America have Alzheimer's disease, which is a selenium deficiency, and they go to medical doctors who haven't got a clue as to what causes it or how to cure it. And then there are a few out here, you know, like Wallach, who know what causes it and how to cure it, and nobody listens. And the reason is very simple. And in the next story that we're going to take up, the story here of the killing fields on page 215, there's a reason why the medical doctors don't want simple, cheap cures to disease, and it's because it interferes with the cash flow. Well, think about it. Wallach says that you can take a mineral supplement. We're not talking about one a day, multiple vitamins from some pharmaceutical company. We're talking about a health food. Mineral supplement. It costs you 50 cents a day, maybe a buck a day. If it costs you a dollar a day, it costs you $365 a year. But people don't have a second thought about spending $9,200 a year, which is $25 a day, for health insurance. People spend $25 a day on health insurance and think that's perfectly normal. But if you suggested to that person that he spend 50 cents or a dollar a day for a mineral supplement package over here to eliminate disease, he looked at you like you're some kind of a stupid, you know. You're suffering from the terminal stupids. Now, I've mentioned this a time or two before, so let me say it again, that in 1918, 60% of Americans had no symptoms. They weren't wearing glasses, they didn't need a hearing aid, they didn't have allergies, and they didn't need bypass surgery, and they didn't have cancer. Now, today, only 1% of Americans are symptom-free. 1%. I'm happy to report I'm one of those. Just 1 in 100 Americans is symptom-free. I don't have any symptoms of anything. I feel good. I'm an old man, you know, and I move around a little slower than I used to, but I can still put in a full day's work. I probably couldn't hold a job, you know, if I was out here, you know, on a construction site, you know, as old as I am and as slow, you know, if I was out here carrying shingles up on the roof, you know, walking up the ladder with a square shingle, you know, I probably couldn't handle it. So that's why old men with gray hair walk around with a cup of coffee in their hand supervising the young men who can still work. But moral of the story is, you know, I might be old, but I ain't walking around with a cane. Now, here in the killing fields, Wallach points out that we're firstly and ultimately responsible for our own safety, health, and longevity. We do not contract with anyone to keep us healthy or warranty our bodies for 100 years. The responsibility belongs to us, and we only seek health care when we screw up something along the line. Unfortunately, most Americans have given up their rights and responsibilities to a doctor, or probably two or three doctors. And they cast aside the simple needs of the flesh, that is 90 essential nutrients, and then they go innocently to the physician and the surgeon as a child goes wide-eyed and hopeful with a stranger offering candy to get into the car for a ride. A ride not of joy or comfort, but of kidnapping, torture, and murder. Well, back in 1991, a Harvard University School of Public Health study revealed that 1.3 million injuries and 198,000 deaths occur every year in American hospitals as a result of iatrogenic or doctor-caused mishaps or adverse events. It's called iatrogenic disease, doctor-induced disease. These iatrogenic injuries and deaths run from 4 to 5 times greater numbers than deaths and injuries on our highways. Out of 31 million hospital admissions in 1991, 1%, that's 1 out of 100, ended in disaster. I contend that's far, far too high when the Harvard study pointed out that 7 out of 10, that's 70% of these adverse results or iatrogenic events were totally avoidable and that 33% were the result of negligence. Medical injury is a hidden epidemic, declares Lucian Leap. He's a medical doctor and the director of the Harvard study. Hundreds of mistakes occur every day in a medical lab or hospital, many going unreported, unrecognized, uninvestigated, and unknown, and therefore uncorrected. Now, according to Dr. Sidney Wolfe, he's the director of the Ralph Nader-funded watchdog group called Public Citizen Health Research. In January of 1993, he said 300,000 Americans, are killed each year in hospitals alone as a result of medical negligence. Okay, now notice he said there's 198,000 that die from iatrogenic disease, but there's 300,000 each year killed in our hospitals as a result of medical negligence. First of all, Wolf's figures are very conservative because Nader's group used the mortality numbers supplied by the medical profession. A neutral outside task force may have found this number to be only 50% of the real figure, or around 600,000. Now, if you want to appreciate how big a figure 300,000 dead people is, then we would have to compare Wolf's figures of Americans killed by friendly fire in American hospitals with our U.S. military losses in Vietnam over the course of the 10-year war, where we lost 56,000 for an average loss of 5,600 per year. Now, according to these figures, you'd have been safer on a Vietnamese battlefield where an enemy had guns and artillery and wanted to kill you than you would be in an American hospital. And so let me give you the statistics here. If you've got 5,600, and then you divide that into 300,000. So let's just take 300,000 divided by 5,600. And you could have been standing on a Vietnamese battlefield, and you'd be 53 times safer there than in an American hospital. You got that? Let me repeat that. These are numbers, by the way, from the early 1990s. It's worse today in 2006 than it was in 1990. But the Harvard Medical School did the statistics and did the numbers, and then they came to the conclusion that 300,000 people a year were dying. Now, that's the conservative end. The truth of the matter is, it's double that. It's double that. But just using the conservative numbers that they admit to, you've got 200,000 dying from iatrogenic disease. That's where they give you the wrong drugs. And then you got 300,000 dying because they cut out the wrong lung. Mistakes. So if you compare that to the battle dead, and remember how excited people got concerning the Vietnam War? I mean, they rioted on the streets, burned down cities. They voted a president out of office and a new one in. Remember that? Okay. Well, if you took those 5,600 people a year that were dying there, and you compared that to the number of people being killed every day in American hospitals, you were 53 times safer on the battlefield than you were in the hospital, according to Harvard Medical School. So in protest to the Vietnam War, millions of irate Americans poured out into the streets. Students took over universities with weapons and explosives. A president was chased from office, and there was political anarchy in America for the last 3 years of that war. Now, where are the protests, and where are the protesters for these 300,000 Americans who are killed every year in American hospitals as a result of negligence? Or I could say profits taken. If Sears Automotive Centers were to destroy 300,000 personal car engines every year by negligently putting vinegar in the oil pan instead of oil, there would be hundreds of lines to file a class action suit. We would bet our house on that one. Yet there are no protests in the streets, not even a crazy street preacher, for no one protests a free service, even if it kills or maims a few unlucky ones. Prescribing for those Americans treated in offices and outpatient facilities isn't any safer than a hospital for those hapless souls taken to the hospitals. Inappropriate prescriptions or multiple prescriptions are dangerous to 25% or more of Americans over the age of 65 living at home. Many of the drugs are prescribed to counteract the side effects of any ordinarily prescribed drugs. Did you get that? I mean, you people, you go over here and you're taking this drug. You're complaining about some symptom. The doctor says, I'm going to give you this drug. You take the drug home, and then it produces some different symptom. You come back to the doctor and say, oh, my God, now I've got this other symptom. The doctor prescribes another drug to counteract the side effect of the drug that he prescribed to you for the malady that you originally came in. And on average, the people that are 65 and older, that's people like me, you and me, us old guys, you know, 65 and older, the Social Security set, we're taking 6 drugs on average. Fortunately, I can report I'm not taking any drugs. I wouldn't take a damn aspirin, for crying out loud, because of the side effect that comes from the aspirin, which is called stomach bleeding. But I just wanted to point out, here's Dr. Wallach comes along and says, hey, these quacks are killing 300,000 W a year, every year that they admit to, plus another 198,000 that they admit to in another category. Now that's a half a million, that's pushing 600,000. We think that's conservative. We think it's really double that, a million people a year. I reported on this to you some time back talking about this iatrogenic disease. Wallach has a whole chapter in here with names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. I think it would be worth the money. I don't know what this book costs. My wife bought it. I'll ask her. Maybe I can report that to you next time. I don't think it costs $25, but maybe it costs $50. Hell, if the book cost $100, it'd be cheap. For this one chapter, just this one chapter in here that deals with iatrogenic disease, it's worth $100. It's worth, to me, it's worth $100. So I thought I would suggest that to you so that you could take a look and call the guy. You know, he's got a number. It's chapter 9 called The Killing Fields, The Mineral Deficient Healthcare System. Let me give you this guy's name and number again. I think it's well worth it. And keep in mind now that I'm not on the take, and Wallach doesn't pay me a dime. And if he sent me $100, I'd send it back on. Remember, the law, or an editorial review, is a public service. And we give reports here. We don't advertise. I don't take any advertising from anybody. And if you want to advertise here, I wouldn't take your ads. And that's because that's bribery. And I'll tell you something about this bribery here as we progress along. But let me give you Wallach's name and number here again. His phone number is 1-800-755-4656. 1-800-755-4656. And the guy's name is Joel Wallach, W-A-L-L-A-C-H, P.O. Box 1222, Bonita, California, 91908. P.O. Box 1222, Bonita, B-O-N-I-T-A, California, 91908. And I think you'll be glad you did. Now, that's the book itself. Now, he also sells these minerals. And so I wanted to recommend this mineral supplement. If you're not, you know, there's other mineral supplements out there, but I think Wallach's as good as any, probably better than most. And he not only tells you what the problem is, he tells you what the solution is and tells you why this is the proper solution. Hey, I'm running out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All right, we've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about rare earths and forbidden cures. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.